can't get enough songs about Jesus, that's for sure. All right, we're there. Kevin Woods, who used to be the youth minister here several years ago, once commented, I asked him how he came up with all these great things. And he says, well, I've got a great imagination. The only problem is I don't know how to put them together. So he says, I just do all the imagining, then I get someone else who knows how to put it all together, and it works out pretty good. Well, I have to tell you, that's a pretty good way to work things. If you know your limitations, recognize there's others who have greater abilities than you, then go about getting it done, and that's your strategy. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing. But you got to have a strategy if you're going to get it done. You got to figure out how to work this all out and get it finished and this sort of thing. And so Kevin was willing to let someone else figure that out as he came up with all the great ideas. In Luke chapter 9, Jesus had talked about those who did not want to follow him. And in chapter 10, he sends out the 70. He's sending out these 70 that are basically going to be doing the same thing that those in chapter 9, back in the earlier part, when he sent out the apostles, to do what they were doing. Now, you have some translations that say 70, and some translations say 72. And that's a debatable issue. Nobody really knows which. There's commentators on both sides of that issue, and there are some that hold 70, some hold 72. As far as I'm concerned, it's just not significant enough to be concerned about it. But the number 70 is significant. It was 70 elders that helped Moses as he led the people of Israel into the wilderness. And there were 70 that's a member of the Sanhedrin, and there's 70. There was thought to be 70 nations in the world at the time when Jesus was here. So all of that, you know, 70 is a unique number. 72, not that unique a number, but you can choose whichever one you want. Doesn't matter to me. And frankly, I don't think it matters to God either. Choose whichever one you like. But the point is, Jesus appointed these individuals, and it's encouraging that these disciples decided to go out and do what Jesus told them to do in light of what had taken place at the end of chapter 9. But you see, Jesus is on a mission. And that mission of Jesus is to save the world. It is a mission with a strategy. Chapter 9, he sent out the 12. Chapter 10, he sends out the 70. And when you get to the end of the book, guess what? He sends you. That's Jesus' strategy. It's a simple one. And it's so simple that anybody can do it. The strategy is this. It's one sinner telling another sinner how to find salvation. And I'm convinced we oftentimes make it more difficult. You know what? Let that baby scream. I'm serious. That is the most beautiful sound. We got sound of life. If they're not screaming, it's dead in here, and I don't like that. So I don't care. Let those little ones make all the noise. I can out-scream them. And if I can't, then that's probably not worth saying anyway. And so what Jesus is telling these 70, and he's telling us as well, and that is go for the harvest is great. Now, he uses agricultural figures because it was very familiar to him, very familiar to them. And when you look at much of Jesus' teaching, you have the parable of the sower, you got the parable of the seed, you got the parable of the vine and branches, you got the parable of the mustard seed, you know, goes into the big tree, and so on and so forth. And so that was very familiar language to them. And I was sitting there trying to rack my brain as to what, you know, would be a figure for us here that we might be able to get a hold of. And I couldn't come up with a figure that would really do us justice, other than the fact, go while there's still time, because time is quickly passing away. But in order to go, we must have the eyes of Jesus. When we look at the masses, what do we see? Crowds, multitudes, masses. What are we seeing when we look at all of these people? And television has a real ability to bring the masses into your living room, to where you could just have these huge crowds. Those of you that watch football, I remember one time just recently turned the football game on, and I believe it was a college game, or maybe it was a pro game, I don't remember, but I thought it was a college game. And the camera did this huge span. He said, look at all of those people. I said, yeah. He said, how many do you think they're there? And I said, well, most of these stadiums probably hold 65,000 or more. 65,000? I said, yeah, and there's some stadiums that'll hold 100,000. And they'll be full. Oh, I would not feel comfortable in that. And a lot of people wouldn't, you know. But do you see a crowd, or do you see people? You see, when Jesus looked out over the masses, he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. Sheep without shepherds means they're just scattering all over the place. Everybody's going in one direction or another. No one really paying any attention to them. And they're just doing whatever they want to do, and so on. But Jesus saw people. He saw people missing out on life. They think they're really living. They have the great thrill of their team winning or scoring or doing whatever. But eventually that game is over. And so Jesus sees people without direction, missing out on life. He sees individuals created in the image of God, just like you and me. Jesus sees people losing out on being in eternity with God. Do we see what Jesus sees? Do we see individuals? Do we see people? Do we see strugglers? Do we see people that are longing for something better than what they have? I believe they're there. And they could be living next door. They could be working right beside you. They need Jesus Christ. And he sees them as needing that. We must have the heart of Jesus. Jesus looked at people and he wept, Matthew chapter 11. As he looked out over the city of Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered you like a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you wouldn't have it. Oftentimes we go through life And our response to people is somewhat indifferent. It's kind of like passing them on the street out here. You know, just go, choo, 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 you know. And we don't really pay any attention to where they're going, what they're doing, what their life is like. We'll even wave at people that live across the street or next door. And we don't think twice about that. We have our inner circle. But what about those who have no spiritual circle? Do we care enough to confront them with the message of Jesus? We must have the focus of Jesus. Jesus faced assaults on every side. Everywhere he went, there was always somebody there that was wanting to give him a hard time. There was somebody always wanting to make life miserable for him. He faced rejection from those he came to save. And eventually he was executed to fulfill his mission. But here's the thing about Jesus. In spite of all of that, he never lost his focus. He never lost the focus and reason of why he was here. He knew he was here for a reason. And that purpose had to do with people. He felt for people in spite of his own weariness. And even in death, he was ministering to another sinner. Because his focus was about people. And we must have the message of Jesus. Jesus made a promise in John chapter 12 and verse 32, "And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." Folks, that's not a gimmick. That's the message of hope. That's the message of salvation. That's the message of a future. That's a message of joy. That's a message of the thrill of life. The message of Jesus is found in Him. It's the message of receiving. I came to give life. And we reach out to take that life. It's a message of sacrifice. Deny yourself and follow me. It's the message of hope that there's something better. But here's the thing. If we're going to have that something that's better, if we're going to have that hope, we're going to have to let go of that which is not giving us any hope and is not giving us any joy, that's not giving us any future, and take the hand of Jesus and let Him pull us to safety. We must have the urgency of Jesus. Jesus' time was limited. I believe His ministry lasted somewhere between 3 and 3.5 years. That's a limited missionary. He spoke often of the urgency to teach people. Let us go somewhere else, and that we may teach, because that's what I came here to do. And we too must grasp the urgency. It's our moment. It's our moment. But in order to do that, we must see the urgency of the need. In Coos Bay, a population, I believe it is 2014, figures 16,315 people. In North Bend, it's 9,545. The total, 25,860. and the majority of them are not going to church anywhere. Majority of them don't know Jesus Christ. Majority of them haven't got a clue of what they're missing out on. The majority of them feel very secure and comfortable in their situation. The great majority of them haven't got a clue that eternity is around the corner. There's an urgency there for us. And God is telling us, go, for the harvest is great. And He said, when you go, travel light. Do you notice what Jesus tells these disciples not what to take? Don't take the money belt. No bag, no extra pair of shoes. Greet no one on the way. Necessary items are all that you need to take with you. Now, we think that the money belt and the shoes and the bag and so on, you know, that seems to you and me like that's just a necessity. And Jesus says, nah, that's just going to weigh you down. And when He says, you know, don't greet them along the way, He's simply saying, keep your focus. He's not telling anybody to be rude. He's saying, you keep your focus. How many times do you run across somebody in your day that you say absolutely nothing about to them about their salvation? One, two, five, ten people? Far too many of them in my day, I can tell you that right now. And the question is, have we lost our focus? Do we understand that Jesus is calling us to take the message of Jesus to the world? And when I'm talking about the world, I'm not talking about the globe. I'm talking about the people next door to you. I'm talking about the people that work alongside you. I'm talking about the people that you enjoy time with. I'm talking about people who need salvation. And we need to travel light as well. And so I suggest you leave behind judgmental attitudes. Judgmental attitudes don't help you any. People know they are sinners. Some may be ignorant of sin, but they know they're sinners. And they may have even accepted society's view of sin. But sometimes it's just best if we leave things up to Jesus. And let Him take care of those things. Let Him deal with the sins. And I'm not saying that we ignore sins, but don't you think God's Spirit can do a better job of convicting people of sin than you can? That's been my experience. When Paul spoke on Mars Hill, he made no accusations. And yet he was before an audience of idolaters. And he just simply said, let me tell you about this God that you've been worshiping in ignorance. When Jesus spoke to the woman at the well, did you notice He made no accusations? She saw her own sins. Go call your husband. Now, I don't have a husband. Jesus said, that's right, you've had five of them. No accusation, just a reminder. Jesus doesn't make the accusation. We don't need to do that. We can leave our judgmental attitudes at home. And always remember, sin is a product of Satan. And Satan is the enemy. Leave behind opinions. People are really not interested in your opinion, even if they ask you for it. If they say, what is your opinion about this? Trust me. The only thing they want to know is if your opinion agrees with them. If it doesn't agree with them, they don't want to know it. So it's better just to not say anything. And just simply say, you know what? I've got an opinion about it, but it doesn't matter. Let me show you what God said. And if I show them what God said, then there's no argument, is there? And we might just, you know, give my opinion. We're liable to spend the rest of the time arguing about our opinions. And that doesn't get us anywhere. And so, again, let's lift up Jesus Christ and let Him work in the hearts. Do you ever notice John the Baptist? There's something John the Baptist did I thought was very fascinating. He sees Jesus coming, and what does he say? Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Everybody in that audience heard what John said. And he pointed every one of their attentions to Jesus Christ. Not to himself, not to anything, but to Jesus Christ. We need to let Jesus work on the hearts of people. And He is the source of salvation. Let's leave behind negativism. Ronald Reagan was successful because he saw good. And he was able to convince the American people of good. You see, if we leave behind the negativism and focus on that which is positive, that which is right, that which is good, be surprised how people seem to want to flock to that. Because people want a vision of what can be and not what is. They already know what is. They already know how things are. Show me that there's something better. Show me what can be. And so we show them an Almighty God that gives hope to brokenness. And we need to leave behind false promises. We need to tell people what God has done. That's right, we need to. And we need to tell people that God is a loving and merciful God. We need to do that. But we need to do something else. And that is that we need to tell people that living for God can be challenging. I think we're all familiar with the truth in advertising. The law of the truth in advertising says that you cannot make a promise and not deliver on it. You cannot tell somebody this product will do this for you when you know good and well it won't. Now, advertisers have gotten around it, and they found the loopholes and the backdoor approaches and so on and so forth. And so, you know, the American people need to be a little bit discerning. But in all reality, you know, if a car or garment or whatever will not do what the person tells you it will do, that's wrong. And there's punishment for that. And we need to tell people when they become children of God what God has done for them, what He will do for them. But there is also something you need to do. This can be challenging. You don't desert God when things get a little bit hard. He's got some expectations. And we take them through the Scriptures and show them what those expectations are. And Jesus tells us, go and let your trust be in God. Don't you just love verse 3? Behold, I send you out as lambs among wolves. Isn't that promising? Doesn't that make you feel good? Lambs amidst the wolves is going to be fodder for the wolves. But Jesus is telling us that's the way it is. There will always be opposition. There will always be opposition. This is not a life of safety. There's always going to be someone who will not be favorable to you. And they will come for you. Isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that Ben Carson now has fallen under the auspices of the news media, and they're going after him with a vengeance? And why is that? Because he is a threat to their ideology, that's why. He is a phenomenal individual and has done phenomenal things. But you see, he's a threat to what we want to continue to embrace him. And let me tell you, that's exactly the way it is for people who do not want to give up sinful ways. You know, they enjoy their sin. Believe it or not, they enjoy their sin. They don't want to be told that is a sinful way of living. They don't want God to tell them that. They don't want Jesus Christ letting them know that is not acceptable. Notice that the Pharisees went after Jesus with a vengeance, because he told them, what you're doing is not acceptable. And so we put our trust in God and let God deal with the opposition. And I want to be very clear about that. You let God deal with opposition. Don't you try it. You're a loser. You try, you'll lose. You'll lose every time. Let me also say that there will be rejection. Jesus said in verse 16, "The one who rejects you rejects me, and he who rejects me rejects the one who sent me." Rejection is hard, isn't it? Have you ever tried to teach somebody the gospel and they rejected what you tried to teach them? I've been down that road, and you feel so bad because you feel like you just didn't do things right. You didn't say it right. You didn't do it right. Something you did wrong. You know what? Don't take it personal. Because if Jesus Christ was sitting there telling them the same thing that you told them, they'd reject him too. Move on. Move on to someone else, but always keep the door open. Because chances are they may very well come back and revisit that. You're not a salesman. You're an ambassador for Christ. And recognize that there will always be loss. We may well experience personal loss because of our faith, but we need to trust in God. We may lose someone we bring to Christ. That happens. I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me. But listen, Jesus lost Judas. And there comes a point where people need to stand on their own feet in their faith. I'm not going to be responsible. I can't be responsible. I don't have broad enough shoulders. I don't have the wisdom. I don't have the faith. I don't have the strength to be responsible for other people. There will be times when it seems that Satan is always winning. Talked a little bit about that in class this morning. But I'm going to tell you, God never loses. He never loses. He always wins. And also recognize that people make choices. The city of Chorazin. We have no record of Jesus ever going to Chorazin. In fact, I think Luke chapter 10 is the only place Chorazin is even mentioned in the New Testament. But no record of him going there. Bethsaida, he did go there. But you notice what he says about Bethsaida. He said, if the miracles that were performed in you were done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. So there's two things here you need to notice. One is Bethsaida, who had Jesus in their presence, where he did do the miracles, rejected it. And there's going to be an eternal consequence. Tyre and Sidon, to our knowledge, no one ever went there. But God still holds them responsible. They're still responsible. Tyre and Sidon is going to have to answer for themselves. And we say, well, but no one went there to teach them the truth. Well, they still could have known about God, but they chose not to. People make choices. You know, Desiree was always interesting to me about this kind of thing. I'd say, Desiree, how's so-and-so doing? Because I hadn't either seen him or there had been no discussion of him or something like that. And Desiree will say, they're not making very good choices. Well, she didn't have to go into what she meant by that. I knew what she meant. They're not making very good choices. Okay. Except that people don't always make very good choices. You'd like for them to, your kids are not always going to make good choices. You know, I've often thought that as parents, we could help our kids make pretty good choices. I didn't do it myself. Wished I had. I regret that I didn't. But those of you that got children that are growing up, you know, you still got some kind of influence on what have you. You know, they get bombarded with this business, you know, God doesn't exist, early in their education. Why don't you take them out someday and let them see the miracles of God? There's miracles all around you. Take them out to the gardens. Let them see God's creation. Talk about God's miracles as flowers open up. Talk about God's creation. You take them out to the water and notice that that water never goes beyond this point. Why is that? Take them to a hospital, to the maternity ward, all those little babies. Talk about the miracle of birth. They'll remember those lessons a lot easier than if you sit them down with a book and start giving them some instructions. And, may I also say, it would be great quality time that you get to spend with your kids. I don't know where you are today. All I know is this. God wants to save the world. And he's put that responsibility in your hands and in mine. Didn't give it to anybody else. I don't know how you're doing it. I don't really care how you do it. God doesn't really care how you do it. You got to do it the best way you know how. All he's saying is, go. You ever see these t-shirts that says, get her done? I think we need to all have a t-shirt that says, get her done. All right? If you need the prayers of the church, if you're longing to I was going to say, if you want to be baptized, we can't do that now because Terry took care of that, so... But if you're subject to the invitation, won't you come and we'll stand and sing?